that is Tender on Radio 3. It's all about me. And that's what it's called. Righty-ho, it's 13 minutes past 12. Phil Whelan here with you. Great to be back after a couple of weeks doing very little. Morris Mizalowski is on Aussie. So how you doing, Morris?
Yeah, very little as well. I'm very, very good. It's getting cold, Phil. It's like winter here again.
I'm just going to turn you up because you're being all timid. There you go. How's that?
Oh, I like to be turned up. Is that any better?
Yeah, of course it's getting like winter. That's what happens this time of year.
I know, it does.
Well, last time we spoke, it was two or three weeks ago, you bowled into the studio, lovely semi-surprise, and we had a really, really good chat because you were on your travels. So great to talk to you again. Interesting few bits and pieces have come our way this week. And somehow we got this notion of, is AI actually helping the things that kids speculated about in the 50s and 60s actually happen? The death ray, the teleporter. Take it from there, Morris.
Yeah, look, I don't know if it's helping, but it's certainly changing the possibility of making it possible. And I think really what AI has done is it's sped up the engineering side of stuff.
Ooh.
Because maybe it's just me, but I'm going to say you, I, and the listeners have fantasized about robots, whether we want them or not.
Yeah,
you know, we've seen Rosie the Robot.
Yeah.
We've seen the flying cars. We all grew up with the science fiction. We can argue if we want them or not, but we all kind of imagine one day somewhere, maybe our lifetime, maybe the next, these things might be possible. The answer is they're becoming really possible now because AI can make machines think faster about how to build better and different machines.
Well, we've had all that stuff for ages, but I think, let's be perfectly honest, your average kid in those days and from there on in wanted something that looked like a person.
Yeah, and I don't know why. We've talked about this before.
Because we recognise I guess.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the fancy word for that is anthropomorphic. We want something that's not human to look like it's human.
Yeah.
I love that word. So we want a robot that kind of has two arms, two legs and a head, and that's been proven over and over again. Lots of research has gone into it over the last 50 years or more, and it always comes out on, no, make this thing look human. You know, don't make it look like a blob or a machine or a screen. We actually want it to have a tilting head. We want it to have a bit of a smile. And those things are really important. And what we're seeing now is that most engineers, most companies have said, yeah, you know, the screens we had in the last couple of years from Amazon and others that we might have in our home that lets us talk to it and show us something, they're great. But people are really craving for something that's more anthropomorphic, more human.
We didn't just want that. We wanted bicentennial man, you know, we've seen the Robin Williams movie.
Did.
That's what people think when they think about
we
robots.
Did, and then the extreme of that was Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, where
true.
The Armageddon was coming.
Ooh.
And they were taking over. And that's always been, I cannot, every day, apart from the tax numbers and the horse races I'm asked for, it's always when will we get this Terminator coming into our lives, and neither of them are true.
Perish that thought if you think about it.
I think so. We're doing enough damage as humans. We don't need to involve another species, so to speak.
The robot is the obvious one to talk about, but the reason we got down this avenue is because Morris saw a Bloomberg article that said Meta seeks to power data centres with energy beamed from space. It's probably really boring, but the words sound brilliant, don't they?
Yeah, it does. So there's been quite a few little stories which are actually quite significant. Little is in that they don't say much yet, but if any of them became truer, they would certainly change really everything about the way we do. And one of them is something you and I have talked about for years, and that's why can't we? If there's so much energy, because one of the reasons we don't have solar energy is because, of course, it gets dark at night. It makes perfect sense. You know, somewhere in the world it's dark, somewhere it's light, it's cloudy, all that kind of stuff. And we know that once we get above our atmosphere, it's just permanent sunlight. I mean, it's dark, but it's just permanent sun out there. So the question is, why can't we collect the sun above our atmosphere and beam it in? And that's been talked about. But now, because energy is getting expensive, because we need so much more of it, and because we are getting better at our engineering through AI and others, it seems that it might be possible.
Well, within our atmosphere, Morris, surely the thing naively to say is, can't we do something that chases the sun?
Well, this is kind of the same sort of thing because it doesn't chase the sun, but it sits out there and it collects it. So what it does is it with a very, very big shield. I mean, we've seen these on science fiction movies as well. You know, with a very, very big shield, a collector dish. I mean, it's much more than that. It just sits there and literally just soaks in the sun's rays all day, every day. It just doesn't stop. And that was never hard because we know that our things that are in space, our satellites and others, do that quite well for their own energy.
Yep.
But what's been talked about and what's becoming imminently possible is actually beaming it back to Earth in a way that makes sense and we can collect the majority of it. And what we're seeing now is a whole lot of companies that are putting money into it, and I think within a couple of years, it might actually be something that we can do. Meta, for instance, Zuckerberg's Meta, has already said that they're going out into space and they're going to be able to collect this energy and send it back, and they're going to use the first gigawatt of energy it brings back. That's a huge amount of energy.
What's the actual use, though?
To power all the machines, because what we have now is the problem that we have so many machines, and if we are going to continue down this AI robot, making our home and energy relatively free and easy. And, of course, the world, if we think about it, we've only got about maybe 30, 40% of the world that can actually afford and has continuous energy. The other 60% of the world does not have ready access to energy is the way that you and I thankfully think about, you know, turn on a switch and don't think about it until the bill comes.
Yeah.
They don't have that yet for all sorts of reasons. So this is seen as a great way to give energy to the whole planet. It should be relatively easily accessible and relatively cheap as well.
You take three or four steps backwards and look at one of those huge pictures of the galaxy and infinite space and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then in the next sentence you go, well, part of our little bit of it can't afford to do. They should be able to, shouldn't they?
Well, of course they should. Of course they should. But, you know, we talk about horrible humans a lot, and horrible humans means that some people can afford it. There are some places that make sense for it to be put into a business.
Yeah.
And most of the world just doesn't have the money, unfortunately, to put the hand in their pocket to be able to say to other companies, we want energy ongoing. It just is a commercial reality, which is not a good one, because we should absolutely be able to give energy to everybody on the planet that wants to be able to turn a light switch, more importantly, to be able to cook, more importantly, to be able to ensure their health, do all kinds of things that many of us take for granted. That 40% anyway takes for granted.
Well, the stuff you've been talking about is going to be top of the list, really, isn't it? You know, when we talk about diseases that need fixing, cancer and the like are going to be up there in the top three that absolutely need addressing. So this one is, I mean, is it still too early to say, how is AI going to help this? Because it's an obvious question.
Well, the AI, again, will be the reason we do it. And not because it can do it, being AI, but because if we're going to use AI, the amount of energy we need is beyond what we can currently provide on Earth at this moment. We just can't produce enough energy to make these AI machines and all the tokens and everything else it needs to work. It just won't go around. It just won't work. And if it does, it's really expensive. So there is a commercial reality. It's kind of a catch-22. There's a commercial reality now to saying, if we can't get cheaper energy, we can't make AI go as fast and as far as we want it to. So we're going to have to figure out that conundrum so we can get AI to do what we want it to do. And that's why it will work now.
Let's go back to those old comic books and stuff. Was there anything written by the classic authors, Jules Verne, etc., and the comic book artists, that kind of hinted, even then, at what we call AI?
AI, absolutely. I mean, much of it has had some kind of a brain that was outside of a human. So there was something that did some thinking. There was a machine that went whir that did something. Even if you think about good old Frankenstein, you know, where they put together the thing, they also took, I mean, it wasn't AI, but they also took a brain from somewhere and they put it back into a human. So something else that wasn't a human brain.
Or dead human.
The original human brain.
Well,
yeah, exactly, worked. So we've always had a fascination of getting something else to think for us.
I wonder where this came from, Morris. It's crazy, isn't it? It's like one of those notions that just spontaneously appeared because we've always thought about it.
Well, we have. If you go back into folklore, going back for millions of years, I mean, it doesn't matter which indigenous tribe you think about, they've all given brain power, brain thinking to something. It might have been the elements, it might have been the gods, it might have been a tree, it could have been a mountain or whatever, but they all inferred that object could think beyond what a human could. So we've always had the notion that something beyond us is capable of thinking in a way a human does. And to me, this is just the extension of that. We've taken that thought and we've really run with it and said, well, maybe something else apart from what's between our ears can do some thinking for us. And then we've invented these other things along the way.
That does make a lot of sense, but it's quite interesting because a lot of stuff we have to think about. Oh, wouldn't this be good? Wouldn't that be good? But then there are things like, oh, I wish we could time travel. I wish we could go invisible. There are things that just happen that they seem to be in our heads already, don't they?
Yeah, don't they? And again, I think that's great science fiction. I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but I grew up with that kind of wonderful stuff, reading it, watching it, seeing it in cartoons and everywhere else. I don't know if we're going invisible, but there are some great technologies around that allow a car to seemingly go invisible, an army tank to seemingly go invisible. It has to do with refraction of light, not with making the thing disappear.
I wonder if anybody's actually thought that through. What would it actually be? You know, the Invisible Man, all that stuff. I mean, there must be some theory behind it that just...
Harry Potter had a great use for it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been the most, I think, the most, you know, recent example of where being invisible made a big difference to him and his life.
You mean you could understand that a bit more? You could kind of...
Well, you can. Look, I'm not sure whether we're going to have an invisibility cloak, but there is ways to make things seem to be invisible. And again, that's through technology. We're going to see a lot of changes over the next few years too, because we're seeing a lot of these, and they are, this is a gender comment, but a lot of boys with a lot of toys.
Yeah.
You know, we're seeing our man from Amazon, we're seeing Tesla, we're seeing all these, you know, Zuckerbergs and the others who have trillions and trillions of dollars and are just literally finding ways to make themselves happy by inventing stuff. Tesla says that he's going to produce, our friend Elon says that he's going to produce 1 million robots, or will be capable of producing 1 million robots in the next month or so, and that's 1 million every year or so, I think, is what he's talking about. It's quite extraordinary. And they're humanoid robots, relatively cheap, relatively quick and easy to set up and to work alongside of. So he's claiming that he'll be able to put what we think a robot should be, hands, arms, legs, again, the equivalent of mechanical, onto workspaces, not so much humans and their homes yet, but humans and their workplaces, literally within the next couple of months.
Yeah, that soon. It's interesting this, because when Morris and I were chatting earlier, I'm like, yeah, Nikola Tesla. Well, I said Tesla. And so Morris tells me a couple of articles about Tesla, the company. I'm thinking Nikola the bloke. But there's an interesting one. You said Tesla targets 1 million a year for Optimus humanoid robot, but will demand follow. Will it be one of those things that when it actually appears, we get too scared to use it?
The answer to the million is yes, it will follow. And the answer is simple, because Elon's taken most of them for himself.
Oh, yeah.
So he wants to use them in factories. And in factories, when you think about them, most probably, we don't have a price yet, but we think the price will be between 20,000 and 30,000 US. We believe the cost will be somewhere around 41 cents an hour for these things to run. That's US, 41 cents per hour to run these. When you think about that as against humans, and I know we're starting to get into the realms of people losing jobs, I don't have an easy answer for that. I'm just talking about the pure maths of it.
Yeah, yeah.
At 41 cents per hour with an outlay of 30,000, that's a one-off outlay, this thing can work 24/7 or as long as it takes to plug itself in and recharge, whatever that bit of it is.
Mm.
You're starting to understand the mechanics of it, and the logistics of it just makes sense now.
Mm.
And that's why he most probably will sell them, because he'll take the first lot. Lots of other factories and manufacturers are already in the wings. China has a great robot industry, one of the largest robot industries on the planet, and there is a huge demand just in your region of the world for robots. So, yes, I think this will work for him.
It's interesting, isn't it? He's had a very bad rap personally in the past year or so, reasons we all know. But when you look at some of the stuff he's got involved with, you can't knock it too much, really, can you?
Yeah, you're right. When you separate the man from the work,
exactly,
you get a very different outcome. I agree. I mean, some of the things we hear about the man, and I don't know him, you know, may lead us to question him. But when you look at what he's done, even if what he does is not the end result, now, you know, even if Tesla doesn't become, you know, the number one car and BYD outsells it, which it does already,
it doesn't matter
because he's pushed it. He's been P.T. Barnum. He's pushed it into our lives whether we wanted it or not. Here it is. Deal with it. And that's been one of his great assets, as well as, of course, being able to turn a lot of these things into great businesses.
I mean, this stuff you've been sending me this morning, we've got another one which we'll quickly get into. You didn't say he wants to make this because he wants to be a flash Harry and make loads of money. You've said he wants to use it in his factories. I mean, economy of labour or whatever you want to call it.
It absolutely is. And not just economy of labour, which is absolutely right, but the 24/7 notion is really important, because if he's going to keep up the production on all the things, on all these other companies, and he's got lots of them now producing lots of stuff, he just can't do it with human hands. We could all argue people looking for work. I get that. But the reality is they're not going to end up in his workforce to a great number.
Well, let's have a look at one more before we say goodbye today. We've got a couple of minutes left. Another article, different publication though. Tesla patents detail Optimus hand and knee designs. Is that a medical thing? I haven't read the article.
No, not at all. One of the big problems, I mean, it can be down the track, but one of the big problems that robots had was really that they're, you know, you and I take for granted our wonderful fingers, our hands, the way they move around, the way they pick up an egg and doesn't break. You know, we can pick up the most tender of flowers and not break it, pick up a child. We can pick up something's very heavy. Our knees kind of bend really well. Whoever created us really did a great job in design. Or that's what we've understood you know, the capacity of what we should be able to do and move around.
Yeah.
Robots could not do that. Their hands were really not able to pick up an egg over and over again, and that's important, light touch. They weren't able to move from an egg to a feather to a really large 300-kilo whatever weight, pick that up as well. They weren't able to bend, run, move very well.
Yeah.
And it's been the one bugbear of most companies. I mean, it's been talked about for decades. What Tesla does, and if it's true or not, we don't know, but in the last couple of weeks he has filed patents for both knees and arms, fingers, hands.
Joints.
Joints that apparently overcome a lot of these issues and give these robots a dexterity of a human.
So that takes us to where we started, the human side of it. So these little details are what's missing. You know, when people say, it doesn't seem really quite human yet, well, this is it, isn't it?
Well, the knee he claims in the patent, and tells us how he's going to do that as much as he will, but the knee will allow its robots to balance, crouch, lift, walk naturally, stand back up and recover when movement goes wrong. You know, when you topple a bit, all the things that we as humans do, it will be able to do, it claims. And the same with its hands, that it will be able to do the full dexterity of a human hand and move between picking up a feather, you know, the lightest of touches, through to picking up a really heavy object and do that really well, he claims. And if he can do that, that's a really, really big step forward on these humanoid-type robots.
So this is the difference between it being a machine and us believing it. Belief, that's the key thing.
Yeah, and not only believing it, but trusting it to do what it wants, because I don't want to stand next to this thing in a factory if it's running around and drop something on me, or if it's going to tip over or whatever else. So it needs to be able to do repetitively and consistently whatever it's told to do. AI will get its brain working. What we need to now do is work on its limbs and joints, and according to Tesla and other patents as well, he's not the only one that has them, but he's the loudest at the moment. They claim that they're beyond that as well, so they can make all these things happen. And we're talking about Hyundai, who bought that wonderful dynamic, you know, that robot, the dog one everyone knows about that runs around, the dog robot. Hyundai's working down that road really fast as well, with similar technologies, different patents.
Brilliant, Morris. Thank you very much. Any directions you want to point our listeners in before we say goodbye for another week?
As always, take a look at the blog, morrisfuturist.com, or join me on LinkedIn for a more regular chat.
All right, then. Well, I'll catch you next week, all being well. Thank you, Morris. That's Morris Misolowski, live from Melbourne.